everybody. This is Jake Senziano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast. Here with my co-host, the multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing great today. How you doing, brother?
Always making it happen, big man. Got a special guest today, Gino. Today's guest is an inspirational speaker and best-selling author known for connecting purpose, people, and performance. Talk about the three P's there. Woo! For almost a decade, his insights and talks have helped hundreds of organizations around the world engage their purpose and inspire their people. So without further ado, Delvin Salvagno, welcome to the show.
Hey, boys. It's great to be here. Appreciate you, Jake. Appreciate you, Gino. Thanks for having me on today.
It is our pleasure. Let's get to know each other a little better. Please share with us your background and how you got started in business.
Yeah, well, how much time do you have? 3 hours? 4 hours? How long is the show?
It's typically like a Joe Rogan. We go like 4 to 5. So take your time, my friend.
That's great. You both look, you know, way more handsome than Joe Rogan. I mean,
well, you know, we got hair still.
Barely.
That's good. No, I appreciate the question. And, you know, purpose point, the concept of it actually was birthed out of a talk that I gave in 2012. And it was kind of a happenstance that I said that word. I was speaking to a bunch of executives at a Fortune 5 company, and I had the honor to meet the founders of that company, two people who had started the company. And I was inspired by the initial story of what started that organization. And it wasn't about profit. It wasn't about products. It was about purpose. And it was an inspiring story. And the company had grown from this, you know, one small shop in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. They may have just gave the
Woonsocket.
Woonsocket. It's always fun to say that. Woonsocket, Rhode Island. They had grown from one location to 10,000 locations across the country and became a Fortune 5 company. And you know, as every company happens to kind of go through this process, most companies start with a purpose. They invite people to be a part of that purpose. They start putting processes in place to achieve that purpose. And then they start measuring performance and they start turning a profit. And all too often, as companies grow older, larger, and bigger, they start focusing more on process, performance, and profit. And they forget their founding purpose point. They forget that they invited people to be a part of that purpose. And so I had watched this happen at the company, and I had said exactly what I just shared with you, gentlemen. And I said, do you remember the purpose point for why we started this whole thing? And that was the first time that I'd ever said the words. And really, when I got this conviction to start calling organizations back to their purpose, to the reason that they started their company, and to inspire their people around that. And then, you know, took it a step further by saying each person that you've invited to be on this journey with you, to be here in this company, they have a purpose that they're here. They have dreams, they have things that they want to achieve for themselves. And they believe that by working here, it's a pathway to accomplishing their purpose, their dreams, their goals. How well are you as an organization focusing on them? And so that purpose point took on a whole new meaning for me. It became this place where individual purpose and organizational purpose kind of come together. You know, what would happen if we could get organizations to not only focus on their purpose as a company, but also focus on the purpose of their people. And that's how this whole thing started 11 years ago.
Davin, can you expand upon the statement you made in the book? The greatest product a company can produce is culture.
Absolutely. You know, we you could look at all sorts of products that companies make. Products come and go. I mean, especially today. I mean, we have so many different things that are coming on scene. I actually had someone just mailed me, a really good friend of mine. I happened to had been on his radio show as a guest, and someone had mailed me a CD of the recording of the show. I don't own a CD player. I have nothing to play it on. I had to thank him. I said, you know, thanks so much for the CD. I have no way to play this because I don't own a CD player. Products come and go. You know, we can make things all day long and eventually they become irrelevant. Some products last the test of time. We have household names that we still have in our cabinets in our house today that our generations before are still used. But, you know, that's far and few between. But what's lasting is what a company is known for, and that's its culture. What's lasting is what that company stands for, its values, how they treat people, You could look back at some legacy companies that have been around for a long time and people who worked there for 20, 30, 40 years, which is a complete oddity today, will tell you that the reason that they stuck around was not because of the products that they made, but because of the company that they worked for, because of how they treated them as a person. And so when you think about that, culture's become a big buzzword over the last 10 years. It's not easy to create a great culture. It's simple, but it's not easy. As my friend Gary Ridge, who's the former CEO of WD-40, one of the best cultures in the world, often says, this stuff is simple, but it's not easy, which is why so many companies fail at it. So if companies put half the amount of time that they put into product development, into culture development, so many of their problems would go away. All the problems that they struggle with when it comes to talent attraction, retention, their brand experience, their employee experience, their customer experience, all of those things would operate at a 10x level if they invested half of the time that they spent on product development into culture development. And that's why I say the greatest product.
I'm going to challenge that a little bit, though.
Go ahead. Yeah,
sometimes it's not as simple as you think, though, because you see, like, these companies in California are putting the, we'll just say, ping pong board and Nintendo and the beanie chairs all over the place. That's, in my experience, a lot of bullshit. And
it
doesn't actually work to achieve what you're attempting to do when you're saying a good culture. I think it has more to do with the simple things at times, how you treat others as humans and you work together to find common ground in things and be fair with one another and have it go both ways, but also making sure the right people are there to receive that. Because I'm just going to use broad terms here, but if the wrong people are on the bus, we've all heard this before, sometimes it doesn't matter how you treat them because they're not the right fit and they're going to respond a certain way. So it's an amazing chemistry where you could have good culture and good practices, but the wrong people there that are going to pollute the culture too. So it is a challenging thing. And when you get it right, you got to keep it going in the right direction because it's a momentum play many times.
That's exactly right. And actually, you just proved the point of what I said. It's simple, but it's not easy. That's the thing, is so many companies are trying to make it complex. They're trying to think, oh, we need to have the ping pong table and the Nintendo and the cafes and all these things. Listen, culture is not your building. Culture is not even what's in your building. Culture is how you treat people. That's why it's so simple. I mean, honestly, it really comes down to treating others the way that you want to be treated. It's simple, but it's not easy because we're not.
People maybe making it more hard than it is, though. They may be overthinking it, to your point. That's where
exactly
I think I was coming
from. And that's my point, right? It's a very simple thing. I mean, at the end of the day, it really comes down. You know, one of the people who are getting tremendous global recognition from this, he was voted CEO of the last CEO of the year last year, was Bob Chapman from Barry Waymiller. Global recognition, CEO of the year. He's been saying the same thing for the last 10 years. Treat every single person as if they were your child. I mean, think about how, I mean, first of all, that might sound really fluffy, but for those of you who have kids, parenting isn't easy. I wish it was. I've got two kids. I've got a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and it's the hardest thing. But loving them is easy. Parenting them is not. And it's the same exact thing, is that when it really comes down to it, culture is really just being good to the people that have decided that they're going to trade their time, their most valuable asset, to come work for your company in term for a paycheck. And when you think about that, we can all make more money. There's never been a greater opportunity on the face of this earth to make more money, but none of us can get back time. Not one of us, not you, Gino, not you, Jake, not me, can add a single minute to our lives. And so people every day are trading their most valuable asset, their time, to go work for a company in lieu for a paycheck. And all companies need to do to create a good culture is to love those people, is to respect them, to treat them as human beings and not as human doings. But they make it so complicated, so complicated.
So, Davin, if I'm listening to this and I've started a company and I haven't really focused on culture, what are a couple of things that I could do right now to get it going? Or if I haven't even started the company yet and I think that's where the focus should be, what should I start doing today?
Two things. So number one, be very, very clear about what the purpose of your company is. not the product that you have, not the service that you have, not even the problem or solution that you solve. And that's counterintuitive to everything that we have been taught, because we want to talk about the problems that we solve, because that's why people buy our products. And that's fine. People will buy your products, but that's not the question that you asked. You asked, how do I create a great culture, not how do I create a great business model? If you want to create a great culture, number one, be clear about what your purpose is. People need to understand what it is that they're a part of. I just actually shared a post today. You know, we've got the Purpose Summit that we do every single year. Next year, we're doing it in Charlotte, North Carolina in April. And one of our sponsors is Ashley Furniture Stores, Broad River Retail. They're the private equity firm that operates Ashley in the Southeast. And I got a message from one of their employees that said, we can't wait to come back to the summit this year. Nobody, and I mean nobody, signs up when they're younger to sell furniture. No one intentionally goes into the furniture business. He goes, but we are so much more than that. We are in the memory making business. We build memories for families through selling furniture. So when you think about this, you know, Howard Schultz from Starbucks, he used to say, we're not a coffee company that serves people. We're a people company that serves coffee. And Broad River Ashley, they're not a furniture company that sells furniture to people. They're not even a people company that sells furniture. They are a people company that makes memories through selling furniture. There's a clear sense of purpose that is a part of the, they don't even call their employees employees. They call them memory makers because they've embedded their purpose as a fabric of their culture. When you're here, you're not here to sell furniture. You're here to make memories for the people who are buying the furniture. When they come in to buy that bedroom set, start talking about, what do you do at nighttime? Do you read bedtime stories to your kids? What's your evening routine like? What are the memories that are going to happen around this product that we're selling you? They focus on the purpose and the memories. That's number one, be clear about your purpose. Number two, understand the purpose of the people that you employ. Why are they there? What do they want to accomplish? What are their goals, dreams, hopes? What are the aspirations that they have by trading their time to come work for your company that they think that they're going to achieve? Do you know what they are? And not just some goals that you put at the end of their performance review to make them feel good. Are you clear about what they want to accomplish? One of the best examples I've seen of this is a company called Lippert. They're a big manufacturing company, $7 billion, global, publicly traded. They actually take their employees' goals and dreams, put them on post-it notes. They put them all on a big wall in their corporate headquarters. And every single time one of those dreams comes to reality, they take it and they put it from one wall and they put it on the other wall in the same room and they celebrate it across the country. And their CEO says that's the number one metric that we measure is the dreams that we accomplish for the people that we work here. So number one, be clear about your purpose as a company. Number two, be clear about the purpose of the people that work for you.
And is that why the journey starts with others and not ourselves? Because you say that in the book, it starts with others and not ourselves.
Absolutely. And listen, it does. Because if so many people think that purpose is about me, about what I love to do, about what I accomplish. How do I get paid to do what I love to do? Listen, if we were going to focus on what I love to do, I love playing hockey. I do. I can't play it as good as I used to. I'm 5'6". I'll never get paid to play hockey. People don't need me to play hockey. So if I were to think that my purpose was about me and what I like to do playing hockey, I would fall significantly short, literally, in life. Because I am short, I can't get paid to do it. It's not something that I can sign up for. It's not something people need. So when we start focusing on purpose, you need to start focusing on what is it that you're good or great at, but what is it that others need? What's the need that you personally meet? People my entire life have told me that I encourage them, that I inspire them, that I'm a great storyteller. My parents used to tell me, you know, when I was younger, that I'm either going to be a great teacher or a great lawyer because I like explaining things to people. And so all along my life, there was these footprints of things that I was great at. So then the question becomes is, okay, well, where do other people need me to use them? And the same is true for you. What are the things that people have told you that you're great at, that you're good at, and where is there a need to use that? And then step into that need. And then when you do, people will thank you and they will recognize you. They will tell you, you've made a difference in my life. And then you will know that you've stepped into your purpose. But you have to focus on the needs of others in order to step into that.
So how was it stepping into your purpose when you left CVS to take the leap?
It was scary. I'm honest. I mean, I want to sit here and tell you, oh my gosh, it was great, right? Listen, CVS was a good company. I was honored to work with them. And if you've read the book, obviously you've shared, you know kind of the story there. This was a big decision. I was stepping away from the most secure, stable, lucrative role that I've ever had in my career – into the unknown. But the reason that I was doing it was very, very clear to me. You know, when I made that decision, I had to ask myself, what was the need where I currently was versus where is the need to where I'm going, and which is greater, which is going to create a greater sense of impact, and which is going to bring me a greater sense of fulfillment. If I were doing this purely off of a business model or where am I going to make the most money, I would have never have taken that leap. I wouldn't. I'd still be working there, and it wouldn't have been scary. But I would have never have ever stepped into what I've been able to do over the last 9 years, right? And that's I share about this in the book and now for Plan A. So many people are afraid of taking the leap. And taking the leap doesn't necessarily mean quitting your job, because there's a lot of people who are listening to this and you say, I have to quit my job. No, you don't have to quit your job like I did. It might mean doing something that you've always wanted to do that you've never done in addition to your job. It might mean stepping into a different role that maybe you didn't think that you were qualified for, but maybe you are and you're just selling yourself short. It might be stepping into doing something for that company that can help transform that company. You know, one of my good friends, his name's Richard Sheridan. He wrote a book called Joy Inc. He's the CEO of a company called Menlo Innovations. And if you learn his story, you'll find out that his leap was actually challenging the company he used to work for and who they are and what they stood for. And by having the courage to step into that conversation, he transformed the entire company and eventually became CEO of the company. And so taking a leap doesn't mean quitting. It means overcoming your fear and stepping out of your comfort zone into the thing that maybe you've been being nudged to do, but you've just never had the courage to do it. And when you do that, you will find that you've stepped into, or at least started to step into, the essence of your purpose.
And so in the book, you talk about the culture and all, and you talk about leadership. Can you give us the qualities of what a leader needs to, I guess, embrace so they can start building and working on culture?
Yeah. So, you know, great lead, there's a big difference. The term leaders gets thrown around so much. It's, again, another buzzword. First of all, there's a big difference between a leader and a manager. You don't manage people. You manage processes. You manage products. You manage systems. People don't want to be managed. They want to be led. And so if you think about the word lead, and I know in the book I talk about the four qualities of a great leader, and I'm not going to go into all four of those here because it'll be a much longer answer. You can read the book if you want to dive into each one of those. But I want to talk about the essence of the word leader. To lead means that you're taking someone somewhere, right? If I'm leading my family down a path, where am I taking them? If I'm leading my team down a path, where am I taking them? If I'm leading one person in a direction, where am I taking them? First of all, are you clear where you're taking people? Second, are they clear where you're taking them? And I think that's the problem, is that so many people throw the word leader out there and they're not clear of where they're leading people to, and the people they're leading aren't clear of where they're going. So number one, as a great leader, be clear about where you're going, where you're taking people, and make sure they're clear about where they're going and why. Why are they going there? So that's number one. Number two, who are you helping them become in the process? Because at the end of the day, if this is about your goals, your ambitions, your company's goals, your company's ambitions, and they're a cog in the machine and you're leading them along that, but they're not going to be better. They're not going to become something better as the process. Number one, you're doing them a strong disservice. Number two, they're probably not going to finish the journey with you. They're not going to follow you for very, very long. So you need to be clear about who you're helping them become along the way. So number one, where are you taking them? Do you know? Number two, do they know? Number three, who are you helping them become along that journey? And are they clear of what that is? And are you clear of what that is?
In the book, you say the key is to have influence, not authority. Can you expand upon that as well?
Yeah. So we all have influence. Not all of us have authority. Every single person on the planet has influence. It's either good influence or it's bad influence. I mentioned my kids earlier. There are people in their lives that are good influences. There are people in their lives that are bad influences. Obviously, I want them to hang around with the people who have good influences. So you could either have good influence or bad influence. We all have influence. And really, all leadership is influence. So therefore, everyone can be a leader. You're either a good leader or you're a bad leader. But not everyone has authority. Authority is given. Leadership is taken. And not taken in a sense of a authoritarian sense, like overthrowing something. Leadership is taken, meaning that I know that I have to lead my I know I have to lead my kids. I know I have to lead my wife. I know I have to lead my team. I have that responsibility. I have to take that responsibility for that leadership. Authority, I can't take that. Authority is built off of trust. Authority is built off of credibility. Authority is built off of your reputation. I could say all day long that I'm leading my team, but if they don't trust me, I lose that authority. And so authority is given to you by others, and it's built off of trust. It's not positional. You could be the CEO of I don't care what company, and you could say that you have the keys to the kingdom and that you have authority. Guess what? If your people don't trust you, you don't have authority, and you also don't have influence. So authority is given to you by others, but leadership you need to take for yourself and recognize that's a responsibility.
In the book, you discuss and dive into servant leadership. What is servant leadership?
So I would argue that all good leadership is servant leadership. Any type of leadership that's not servant leadership is poor leadership. Servant leadership is a concept that I learned from Ken Blanchard, who of course wrote the foreword to the book. Servant leadership is all about putting others before yourself. It's all about recognizing that every aspect of what you are doing is meant to help others be better as a result of your leadership. A lot of times it doesn't necessarily mean denying your goals or your self-ambitions or even sacrificing them. It just means prioritizing the needs of others over the needs of your own. It also means viewing your hierarchy different. In the book Servant Leadership, if I were to draw a pyramid of a typical hierarchy, you would have the CEO at the top, you would have the C-suite after that, then you might have a bunch of executive vice presidents, senior vice presidents, directors, et cetera, et cetera. Eventually you would get down to the front lines. Servant leadership is inverting that pyramid. Servant leadership is saying, okay, the CEO is here at the bottom and is holding firm the foundation and the purpose of the company. And their goal is to serve their frontline direct reports. And their role is to serve their frontline direct reports. And when you invert that pyramid and all of a sudden you have leaders walking around a company instead of pointing out what didn't get done or what didn't happen and pointing out all the flaws and mistakes like a lot of hierarchies tend to do, when you flip the pyramid, what happens is you have leaders walking in saying, how can I help? How can I help? What barriers can I help remove for you? What resources do you need? What goals can I help you achieve? Imagine if a company at every single level just flipped that mindset, how much more effective they can be. The problem is that traditional hierarchies are more oppressive. Traditional hierarchies point out what didn't happen. They're asking why it didn't happen. Everyone's trying to save face. And all that does is create dysfunction in your team. So servant leadership is flipping the pyramid. It's recognizing that you are there to serve others and to prioritize them. And walking into every situation and asking, how can I help? Removing barriers, providing resources, and leaving people better than you found them.
Before we go to the short answers, you had just mentioned the word purpose. In the book, you talk about the elements of purpose. Let's go over those four. What I love to do, what am I great at, what does the world need, and what can I get paid to do?
Yeah. So, and that's not my concept. That concept has been around for a very, very long time. I unpack it a little bit differently than some others. So if you're looking at kind of a traditional Venn diagram, what Gino just talked about, you've got what you love at the top, you've got what you get paid to do at the bottom, and then you've got what you're great at on one side and what the world needs on the other side. So think about a compass, north, south, east, and west. Most people try to figure out the equation of how do I get paid to do what I love to do? And if I do that, then I step into my purpose. We already covered that. I love to play hockey. Obviously, if that's all I did, that would not be my purpose. The starting point of purpose is number one, what is it that you're great at? I would challenge you, take out a pen, take out a paper, write a list of all of the things that you have been told that you're good at or that you know that you're great at. And it could be anything, regardless of whether people are not, just write the list of everything that you know that you're great at or that people have told you that you are great at. Make that list as long as possible. Then I would go through and I would highlight of all of these things, which of these are things that the people actually need? What are things on this list that the world actually needs? Which of these things that if I applied them would actually contribute to society in some way? Highlight those things. Now let's focus on those things. Of the things that you've highlighted, ask yourself, if I did these for the rest of my life, would I genuinely enjoy doing them? Would I actually love doing them? Circle the highlighted ones that you know that if you spent the rest of your life doing it, you know that they would bring you joy, they would bring you fulfillment, you would love doing them. Now just focus on the things that you've highlighted and circled. We've just narrowed this down to what you're great at, what the world needs, and what you love to do. Of these things, which of these can you get paid to do? Now go do that.
Take that, Jack. All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
All right, we are back. So we're talking about culture earlier in the show. Where's a good place for folks to start? Say they're scaling a company and this is now on their radar, but they haven't really addressed it. It's just the company's been growing and it's developed a culture of its own. Where's a place to maybe plant a flag and to start to grow, and how does that look for a young organization?
Yeah, and I know we kind of, Gino asked earlier, what are two things that where you would start? And I said, be clear about what your purpose is as an organization and be clear about the purpose of your people. I would also,
the actual implementation pieces to it, because it's not like we were saying, it's not the buy the fluffy couch and the ping pong table.
Correct.
It's like the actual blocking and tackling of it.
Yeah. So to build upon the starting of those two purposes, be clear about what your purpose is, your organization, your people, I would start with your values. Because here's the thing, your purpose might change over time. And I know that that's not a common thought. We could all argue that there's a grandiose purpose for our lives, but your purpose as an organization might change over time. But your values never should. Your values should be evergreen. And so at the heart of every great culture are clearly defined values that you live by. These are the rules of engagement. And so I would start by wanting to know, what is it that you stand for? A friend of mine, Ron Carucci, he wrote the book, To Be Honest. And I love what he said at the Purpose Summit last year. He said, if I followed your team around with a camera all day long, and then I played that on TV, would what people see on TV align with what you stand for? Would your values actually show up? Because there's a lot of companies that say they have great values, they have a great culture, and they put those things on a wall or on a paper. But then if you go candid camera and walk around those companies, they don't hold up. So if you really want to have a really great starting place, like tangibly put things into action, boots on the ground, number one, clearly define your values. I mentioned Lipper earlier. This is probably a better answer to your question, Jake. Lipper and Jason Lippert, the CEO, will tell you this. And I mentioned about them in the book. They were not a great company founded on a great culture and values and all of these things that I'm talking about. They were a company focused on one thing. How do we become a billion-dollar publicly traded company? That is all they focused on. He was the third generation CEO, and all he focused on was how to become a billion-dollar company. He took it over at $63 million. He scaled it to $1 billion. They became publicly traded. They had 5,000 employees the day that they became $1 billion publicly traded after a 10-year journey from $63 million to $1 billion. And he had one problem. 6,000 people quit the company that year. Now, how's that possible when you only have 5,000 employees? Well, that meant that all the employees they had quit, plus all the ones that they were bringing in. Why? Their culture was terrible. They didn't have a clearly defined set of values. They had a great business model, but they didn't have a great culture. And so what he decided to do was say, we need to change this. We need to build a great culture. And where he started was values. He started by saying, What are the things that this company stands for? What are the rules of engagement? You don't say one day that, you know, teamwork matters and the next day it doesn't. You don't say one day that integrity matters and the next day it doesn't. You don't say one day that results matter and the next day that they don't. And so they got real clear on what their values were. They printed them all out on the on cards, and every employee name badge that exists out there has their values on the name badge. So it's not on the wall. It's not. It is physically on the person every single day. And then they embedded those words as a part of their conversation. They talked about them every single day. Every decision that they made as a company, does this line up with our values? Those values became the rules of engagement for working at the company and for every decision that they made. And that was the starting point of them building a great, great culture that has now led them to a $7 billion company with only 24% turnover.
That's hiring 16 people a day plus if you're working every day, if you're working a 7-day work week. That's how many people they had to be bringing into that organization. So it's interesting too, because the growth model that he wanted to do early on actually was in disalignment with everything they were doing, because it's a lot less expensive if you're not hiring 16 people a day also to grow your company. So not only is the company, I'm sure, a lot more profitable now, but it probably is a better, you know, feel and a better place to be for, you know, the everyday team member that's there as well.
100%. I mean, what they have going on dynamically is phenomenal. And I'll tell you right now, they're actually struggling through one of the most challenging times in their industry. RV industry is down 54%. But you know what? They're surviving it because of their culture. And had they not had the culture they have, I'm not sure they would be surviving and weathering this storm. And, you know, you mentioned something, Jake, about the cost of hiring and the cost of turnover. So many companies say we can't afford to invest in culture. We can't afford to invest. You can't afford not to. If I were to calculate how much money you're losing in turnover because you have a poor culture versus how much it would take you to invest in a great culture, it would blow your mind. And so for every leader out there who says, I don't have the time or I don't have the money, the reality is you can't afford not to have the time or not to have the money to invest in your people or a great culture, because it's costing you more to not do it.
Good culture is good business. They go hand in hand if you don't realize that. Think about this. You hire somebody. They probably can do their job relatively decent by the 6-month mark, let's just say, maybe month 9. So the first 6 months, you're losing, you're underwater. Maybe by month 6 to 9, you're actually getting a solid amount of production. And then if they turn over in month 9 and 10, there's some cost to that as well. Then you're bringing the next person. It's a death spiral beyond belief if you look at it. And you've seen these different numbers in these charts that he's referring to of this is the actual cost of turnover. You need to look at all of this very clearly, because the productivity early on is shit. And then if they're checked out by month 7, once they've figured it out, the productivity goes to shit and they're moving on to something else. So there's a real negative cost to poor culture and turnover. So you really need to look at that. anything that you've read in the last year or two that's added value to your life that you want to share with the folks?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have a stack of books on my desk that I'm constantly reading, usually multiple books at a time. My friend Chester Elton has a great show called Top of the Stack, where he's always like, what's the book that I'm reading at the top of the stack right now? My friend John Gordon just released a brand new book called The One Truth. John spoke at the Purpose Summit last year. He's written over 20 best-selling books. But this book right now is challenging me, if I'm honest. And I think the reality is we live in such a fast-paced world. We're running after so many things. I'm writing a second book right now called The Thief of Purpose, which I outlined 15 different things that rob us of our purpose every single day, the things that get in the way that we don't even see because we're so focused going and going and doing that we're not present in the moment. And if we were present in the moment, we would recognize what's getting in our way. And John outlines actually a lot of this in his book, The One Truth. In fact, it's made me even think differently about how I'm writing my book, because he challenges you and says, realistically, when you think about your life, what it is that you stand for, what your purpose is, what potential you have, everything, the essence of your being, What is that? And we don't slow down enough to think about that. We don't slow down. You know, this world, we are running so fast, comparing ourselves to other world. Everyone's got a podcast. Everyone's on 10 different types of social media. Everyone is trying to figure out how they can grow their following as quick as they possibly can. And at the end of the day, we're not sitting here and saying, well, what's it all for? What's the real reason that I'm doing this? Because at the end, it's all fleeting, right? And so it's really given me pause to stop and think about everything that we're doing. Why am I writing my next book? You know, why am I giving this next talk? Why are we doing the next summit in Charlotte? How many more are we going to do? I just was on a call yesterday with Australia and doing a summit potentially in Asia, Australia, Oceanic area. We were on a call with Europe about doing one in Barcelona. And normally I would have a knee-jerk reaction and say, great, let's do it. Let's go. Let's go. We'll figure it out. Let's go. And this book is really causing me to pull back and say, time out. Why are we doing this? What's the reason that we're doing it? And so I could give you a whole bunch of nuggets out of the book, but the overall arching piece is it's caused me to slow down. I feel like I've been running really hard for 10 years and some things have been really successful. Other things I've made a mess of and I've had to clean up. But this has caused me to slow down and really think, what's next and why? Why is that next? What's the impact look like? What's the reason for doing it?
So are you going to Gulch Gulch after you checking out, man? You going off the grid? What's going on?
I thought about it. I know. Listen, this I was all over the place this summer.
Well, and you were sounding like the patriarchy earlier, man. You might be getting canceled after this show. I just want to be clear on that.
That's fine. If I get canceled, well, then I can go off the grid, right? Because I have a reason to stay
next,
on it,
then, right? That's next. Thank you. Right. you and Neo riding out on the stallion together.
Huh? I'm in.
What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you? What's the hub for all things your conference and books and everything?
Yeah, so a couple sites, davinsalvagno.com, obviously for me, for books, for talks, for podcasts. Tons of resources on there, lots of interviews with lots of amazing people who I mentioned here. Purpose Point, which is our company. We've got a ton of different events that are happening. We've got the Culture Forum happening in San Diego, October 24th and 25th. That's a gathering of hundreds of CEOs and leaders from around the world focused on building the best cultures in the world. A lot of the people that I mentioned on this show will be there since we talked a lot about culture. The Purpose Summit in Charlotte, North Carolina next April. April 29th through May 1st, you could go to thepurposesummit.com and get your tickets for that. That is going to be absolutely transformative. I'm not a big NASCAR fan, Jake or Gino, but we're taking over the entire NASCAR Hall of Fame. That place is phenomenal. If you've ever been there, it's going to be a great experience with hundreds of leaders around the world.
That's in Charlotte?
In Charlotte, yep, next April. So you're going to want to be there. So that's it. davinsummit.com, purposepoint.com, thepurposesummit.com. It's been great being with you, gentlemen. I thank you so much for having me on for the show.
Davin and Richard Petty. Gina, he just tried to steal your thunder and take your outro away. You going to let him do that? What's up?
Steal my thunder. Jake, Davin Salvagno, not Salvagno. Salvagno.
Yes. like lasagna or gnocchi, right?
He said lasagno.
Salvagno, young guy from Philly, moves to Detroit, works for various companies, works for Costco, works for CVS, has the dream job and decides to say, you know what? I like the job. It's cushy. I could stay here, make money, work up the corporate ladder, but that's not really my ultimate purpose, and ends up writing a book, Finding Purpose at Work. And I think the quote that really has left me with the show and left an imprint on me, I should say, is a greatest product a company can produce is its culture. And go back to listen to the podcast again on how you can start creating and building a culture. Because if you're not right now, you're going to be left in the dust. Because, you know, millennials right now don't stay at jobs. They stay at jobs between 2 and 3 years. And it's not on their fault. There's a lot of companies out there that don't have the culture and don't have the purpose. So if you want to retain employees, make more money, and just have a much, I guess, more impactful life, don't just focus on the business plan and the systems and processes. Focus on the people and the culture. Jake, back to you, my friend.
Final thoughts. Rayo's just sold for $2.1 billion. Maybe we come up with the next sauce called Lasagno Sons. That's what we're doing around here.
Business together and create Lasagnos, we'll make a sauce together. I'm 100% in. 100% in.
All right, guys. So good. As always, we believe in buying deals for the long term, thinking decades. I'm Jake. He's the G Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time. Thanks, fellas.